Session number 11773, Mr. R. Langdon Davis, Reel 1.
Mr. Langdon Davis, Reel 1. Could you tell me where you were born, please?
In Southampton.
And your father, I think you said, was a journalist?
That's right.
Were you educated in Southampton?
No, I didn't live there for any time. I was educated in first at Dartington Hall, and then at Leighton Park School near Reading.
How old were you when you left your education?
16.
And I think before that you were in Spain.
Yes, I went to Spain during my summer holidays. That would have been in August 1936. But I had lived in Spain as a child.
How did that come about?
Well, with my father's work took him to Spain. First in 1921, he had in fact been there in 1920, but we stayed out there for about 18 months in 1921 in the Pyrenees, and then later we went to San Feliu de Guíxols, which is on the Costa Brava, and we were there for about 2 years, 1926, 1927 and 1928. And that's, I suppose that, I was very impressionable there. That is the place where I learnt to ride a bicycle, and I still regard that as my home. And we only came home from there to England there to be educated.
Did your father work for a national newspaper?
Mostly he seemed to be a freelancer, and he used to work for American organisations. But when we come to the Spanish Civil War, yes, he was working then for the News Chronicle.
What are your earliest memories of Spain, apart from learning to ride a bicycle?
Well, I remember it as a very happy childhood. I remember that my father used to have gramophone recitals. He was a great gramophone record enthusiast, and he had a gramophone and many records, and all sorts of people used to come to the house to listen to them. And that way he got to know a lot of the people who later became political leaders, particularly Juan Ventura Gassol, who was a minister in the Catalan government for a time. And but of course, at that age, I was only sort of vaguely aware of these activities. I took no part in them.
What was your father's attitude towards the political situation in Spain, personally?
At that time, going back to the 1920s,
yes.
Well, then, of course, there was another dictatorship, Primo de Rivera, and he was obviously opposed to that, and he was very interested in the Catalan nationalist. Most of the people that he met were Catalan nationalists.
Was he sympathetic to their cause?
Oh, yes, yes. And he spoke Catalan, not Spanish.
How much of Catalan and Spanish language did you yourself learn as a boy?
Very, very little. Very little.
What are your memories, first political memories of Spain?
Well, I suppose when I went out there in 1936, I wasn't particularly political. I was at that time at a Quaker school, and a lot of people there, of course, were pacifists or slightly left of centre, I suppose. And when I went out to Spain, of course, that aroused my interest. You couldn't help it, because you got the impression that people would rather have politics than their breakfast.
This was in Barcelona.
Well, even before we got to Barcelona, what happened was that I arranged with a school friend that we would go for a holiday in Spain, in the summer holidays, and then, of course, the Civil War broke out, and my friend's mother wouldn't let him go, and my father took over his ticket, and I went out with my father, and he was going up to the News Chronicle, and he had a motor bicycle, and we had great trouble in getting this across France and getting it through customs and so on, and eventually we arrived by train at La Tour de Carol, which is just across. We had to change trains there and get a train to Bourg-Madame, which is just across the frontier from Puigcerdà in the Catalan Pyrenees. And we pushed this motor bicycle across the frontier, and were taken and escorted by rough-looking militiamen to the mayor's office, where we confronted the local committee that was running things, and that was composed of representatives of the chief political groups, and was under the chairmanship of the FI, the anarchists, who were quite strong in that particular town, and the others were the UGT, the Socialist Trade Union, the Esquerra Catalana, which is the Catalan Nationalist Party, and the PSUC, as it was called, which was really the Communist Party. Catalan communists being sufficiently separatist to have their own communist party. And we had to go to them to get permission to be there at all, and then to get use the motorbike, to get petrol, and to get permission to do anything, really. Eventually we got all these permissions, and we found some petrol, but I don't know how it quite happened now. I can't remember. We were somehow separated from the motorbike. We had to get the petrol in, I don't know, a watering can or something, and take it to the motorbike, fill it up, and then off we started. And it was a little bit of political education on the way. I was sitting on the pillion of this motorbike. My father hadn't ridden a motorbike for about 10 years, and I was a bit apprehensive about it, and we went over the Col de Tosas, which is a fairly severe mountain road. I mean, it was then, it's a bit better now, but we were stopped near the top by a group of militiamen. They wanted to see all our papers and passports and so on, and I remember that in those days the British passport was signed in facsimile by the Foreign Secretary of the day. My father's was of course older than mine, and his had been signed by Ramsay MacDonald, who happened to be Foreign Secretary then in addition to being Prime Minister. Mine, on the other hand, was signed by Anthony Eden, who was the current Foreign Secretary. And these chaps, these wild-looking armed men up in the mountains, they'd heard of Ramsay MacDonald, and they knew he was a traitor to the cause, and they didn't really think much of this passport. And they'd also heard of Anthony Eden, and they knew that, well, he wasn't actually exactly a socialist or anything like that, but he had a reputation for being a fairly good chap. And this was the extent of their knowledge of British politics. Anyway, we got through that, and we drove over the mountains to a village called Camdevano, which is just north of Ripoll, and I had arranged to stay for a holiday there with a Catalan family that we'd known when we'd lived out there, and my father left me there and he went on the motorbike to Barcelona. Even in to stay with a family on holiday required the permission of the local committee, and I still have a small piece of paper stamped by the Catalan Nationalists of Ripoll, the Anarchists, the FI, the UGT, that's the Socialist, the CNT, that's the Syndicalists, and also the another political party which I... the Communist Party of Catalonia, which is obviously an old rubber stamp, or they didn't know that they'd been merged with other parties to form the PSUC. And this piece of paper merely allows me, an English subject, to stay in the house of the Casanovas, and commands that I be not molested. My father writes in a slightly, perhaps exaggerated way about this little incident when he says that the chairman of the committee, the anarchist chairman of the committee, had told him that if anything happened to his son, that's me, while my father was away, my father could personally shoot him. I don't know whether that's true or not, but another little tiny thing I remember about that, they were painting a big notice to be put up over the house where the committee was established, and it was called Comité Antifascista, the Anti-Fascist Committee, and it was in Catalan, and they'd spelt the word anti-fascist wrong. It's spelt, it, fascista is spelt in Catalan F-E-I-X-I-S-T-A, and they spelt it with an A instead of an E, and I, being a cocky so-and-so, pointed this out to the chairman of the committee, and he was somewhat taken aback, and had it corrected. So I stayed in Camdevano, and the Casanovas had a son a little younger than me and two daughters about my age, and we walked in the mountains and we just did the things that one did on holiday in a mountain village, not terribly exciting. And then my father sent a message to ask if I would come down to Barcelona, and went back to the committee to get permission to go to Barcelona, and I still have that document.
What date is that?
That's the 14th of August 1936. And this permits me to go to Barcelona by train. And we went down the train, that's Mrs. Casanova, Senora Casanova, and we went on the Transpirenaico Railway, still exists, and that was under the control of the Anarchist Trade Union, and they were delighted to have liberty. And liberty to them meant that they no longer had to stick by timetables, and they could go as fast as they liked. And we went went from Camp de Varno to Barcelona, probably in the quickest time it's ever been done. And we arrived in Barcelona, and I spent about a couple of days there, that's all. But there were days which I suppose had a very great effect on me at that impressionable age. And everything was run by the political parties. Different political parties ran this or that, and the Ritz Hotel had been turned into a sort of communal kitchen, and that was run, I think, by the... Oh, yes, that was run by the FOSIG, which is the Federación de Obreros Servicios y Gastronómicos, I think. In other words, the catering trade union. There were demonstrations going on all the time, people marching about, people being allegedly marching off to the front under the banners of the different political organizations. I remember, for example, a demonstration by the BOOM, which is the so-called Trotskyist party with which George Orwell was associated. And in retrospect, having read George Orwell's Homage to Catalonia, he was obviously, perhaps in a more sophisticated way than I, because he was older than me, but he was obviously affected in the same emotional way as I was by all these goings on, terrific enthusiasm and misplaced optimism about the conduct of the war. And to that extent, the picture that he paints of Catalonia is absolutely correct. But I don't think he rarely understood Catalonia, because for one thing, when George Orwell went back to Barcelona from the front, he was very surprised to find people speaking a language that wasn't Spanish. Well, of course, everybody speaks Catalan. Not everybody, but most people in Barcelona speak Catalan. That is perhaps a digression, but except to say that one couldn't help being sort of impressed and enthused by all these goings on. I remember being taken round by my father to look at burnt out churches. If you were read the English press at that time, you would think that all that the Republican supporters did with their time was to burn out churches. Well, there were a few churches that were burnt down, and I remember visiting one. My father took a photograph of me outside one, which he published in his book on the subject, and so forever I appear as somebody who has just lit a match to a church in Barcelona, which is totally untrue.
What was his object in taking you to these churches? To make some point?
Well, it wasn't he wasn't really taking me. He was having a look around as a journalist. Just wanted to check up on what really was going on. And particularly he wanted to inquire into whatever foundation there might be for the atrocity stories that were being published in the right-wing press in Britain at the time.
Do they have slogans written on them?
I don't recall, sir. Certainly the one outside which I was photographed didn't. Nobody was much interested in it. It's a sort of gut reaction, and it's whenever there has been civil war in Spain over history, in the Carlist Wars, first thing people do is burn the churches. It's nothing, not peculiar to the the Republican supporters at that time. In fact, that's nothing to do with really the Republican supporters, it was the anarchists. But of course, the anarchists in Barcelona were extreme, and other parts of Catalonia as well, were extremely strong. They were the, they ran the show. They were deservedly proud of the way they had put down the Franquista revolt in Barcelona, and wielded a great deal of influence. What was happening in this sort of general chaos, a lot of old scores were settled, and a lot of people were taken out at night and bumped off for purely personal grudges and grievances, which had nothing to do with politics.
Did you get the impression that what you might call a class war was going on?
Oh, at that time, yes. It was very much as if the great proletarian revolution was taking place. And the trade unions and the left-wing political parties, of course it's wrong to call the anarchists a political party because they're not political, but they were the people that were in control, and the Catalan government was keeping a very low profile. It wasn't until later on that the Catalan government, and indeed the Spanish Republican government, with the support of the Communist Party, as we know from George Orwell's book as well as other sources, really took control of the situation. But in August 1936, it was all the workers, and it so happened that the Catalan, the president of the Generalitat of Catalunya, was very popular with the anarchists because he was a lawyer and he defended them without fee in the past. But things were very, very exciting. Chaotic, but exciting. They were getting things organised in a way. There was enormous sort of enthusiasm and support for the various militias. Each political grouping was organising its own militia. And none of them had much idea of military matters. Mm-hmm. As we know, they weren't terribly successful in fighting the professional army of Franco.
Were the different militias readily recognisable?
Oh yes, they carried banners and armbands with the initials FAI for the anarchists, UGT for the, well really the TUC, but the socialists in shorthand. They were recognisable.
Were there any rich people about in Barcelona, or were they undercover?
They were keeping a very low profile, and they were wearing their old clothes. It was not done to wear a tie, or even a hat, at that time. They were about. Now, amongst the people that I personally met in Barcelona and also had met up in the mountains, because that's where they'd come from, were, apart from Senor and Senora Casanova, to whom I have referred, there were two brothers from Ripoll, one of whom ran the family fruit importing business, or import-export business, but the brother was a priest. But he was obviously not dressed as a priest, and he was really in hiding. But they were there, and they seemed to come to no harm. As far as I know, they never came to any harm. But they wouldn't have been on Franco's side. They would have been Catalan nationalists. The Casanova had been the manager of the Hispano-Suiza factory in Ripoll years before, and he had had a strike in his factory, and he'd had to call in the police to put it down with firearms. So he wasn't very popular, and that's why he was hiding in Barcelona and not staying up in the mountains. His wife, on the other hand, was a staunch socialist, and was very much in favour with the socialist authorities up in Ripoll. So yes, there were rich people. There's another man which we met there, whom my father knew, a lawyer called Limona, and he later got out into France, and it turned out that he had been a Franquista, unbeknown to us at the time. But Catalonia is, of course, different from the rest of Spain in that respect, that Catalan nationalism is so strong amongst all classes that, I believe, saying that in all the 40 years of the Franco regime, Franco never set foot in Catalonia.
Did you ever see priests or nuns about in the street in Barcelona?
Not in their religious habits, no. They would have been in disguise, in ordinary clothing.
Was there any sign of the fighting that had taken place in Barcelona in July?
Oh, yes, there was. One thing that was in the Ramblers, down by the barracks, which the anarchists had stormed almost barehanded, there were little memorials with flowers where people had fallen in the course of that. And that was only that would have been about 3 weeks before. 4 weeks before.
Yes. What was their attitude towards you as an Englishman, English boy?
Oh, I suppose I was a bit of an oddity, really. Everybody was very friendly. But I suppose they thought it's a bit odd that I should be there, but nobody. They had no problems of any sort from being English.
Was there any sign of disorder?
In the sense that you couldn't walk about the streets safely, no. It's perfectly safe to walk about the streets. But there's no doubt about it, people were taken out and bumped off. There was no actual fighting there. That was over in Barcelona. Fighting all taking place on the first day. And even up in Camp de Vano, I made a note in my diary that six anarchists had arrived in the village from Barcelona by car.